Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. Listeners to the Three Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, we have bad, and we have crazy martinis for conservatives today. And David, the good martini today is that suddenly the Democrats, now that they're about to lose the White House and won't have control of any of the chambers of Congress, are really, really excited about some of the constitutional provisions that for the past 8 years they haven't been all that excited about, whether it's free speech, whether it's about limited government. All of a sudden, the priorities change a whole lot.
For 8 years, we've seen the free speech and religious liberty run down essentially by the mainstream media, by the cultural left. We've seen the power of the presidency extolled as the great and good development in modern American political life. Federalism has been a code word for racism. Well, now in a Trump administration, I think the good martini is, guess what? Dissent's going to be the highest form of patriotism again. Free speech is going to be loved from coast to coast by the cultural left. Federalism is going to be respected. And you know what? The left is going to rediscover separation of powers and the desire to rein in executive authority. So some good news in all of this is a significant number of Americans are going to rediscover the Constitution of the United States of America, rediscover their appreciation of it now that they're out of power.
It's amazing how many Democrats have referred to the Constitution in the last 48 to 72 hours, whereas during the campaign, you didn't hear a lot about it.
Oh, yeah. One of the funniest elements is the change from respect for separation of powers has now replaced the phrase obstructionism. So when it was presumed that Hillary was going to win, Congress fulfilling its constitutional role was, quote, obstructionism. When it's pretty darn clear that now that Trump is president, going to be president, then Congress has got to exercise the separation of powers. And we're going to discover, guess what? Renewed love for the filibuster. So all of this is incredibly predictable. And it will switch again if and when the Democrats win back the White House. But for now, let's just sort of relish this newfound love for the Constitution.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is amazing. And Chuck Schumer will be the paragon of that separation of powers and the checks and balances. And do you expect him to be the big media hero coming forward, or will Nancy Pelosi still get some of that credit?
I'm not seeing Nancy Pelosi getting a lot of credit. I think Chuck Schumer, he'll be a new leader. He'll love the Constitution so much, he just might as well rename himself Alexander Hamilton, after the New York founding father. I mean, so, yeah, it's going to be, you know, we laugh about it, but there is a legit silver lining. Every new American generation needs to understand the value of the Bill of Rights, the value of our checks and balances, and the value of limited government. And a generation that so far had been raised on the notion that they were the coalition of the ascendant, that they were going to win now and forever, was beginning to turn its back on free speech. It was beginning to turn its back on separation of powers because they wanted their way. This introduces a little bit of wisdom and temperance into the process.
Well, speaking of free speech, let's move on to martini number two, because people who don't like Donald Trump very much are expressing their right to free speech in a number of interesting ways. Here's the USA Today story. Protesters took to the streets Wednesday in at least 10 cities to march against President-elect Donald Trump, and numerous college students and faculty leaders took to social media to announce support groups and even postponed exams. Protests were underway in Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Boston, Washington, D.C., Portland, Oregon, St. Paul, Minnesota, and several other cities. An estimated 2,000 protesters shouted angrily in downtown Seattle, expressing their frustration at the Trump victory over Democrat and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. In Los Angeles, protesters poured into the streets near City Hall and torched a giant Trump effigy. Later in the night, hundreds marched onto the busy 101 freeway and brought the highway to a complete standstill. In Washington, D.C., hundreds took to the streets carrying signs saying "Nasty women fight back" and "White males for equality for all." Then we got in New York, thousands of demonstrators blocking off streets around Trump Tower near 57th and 5th Avenue. chanting, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Donald Trump has got to go." And that was one of the familiar chants from Wednesday night. Here's a little montage courtesy of a CNN.
No Trump, no KKK, no racist USA, no Trump, no KKK, no racist USA.
Not to be outdone, David, let's go to the campuses. There are support groups available all over the place. Iowa State University got in on the consoling with its multicultural center, hosting staff to, quote, offer support and talk to students individually or in small groups. An email to the campus community stated on Wednesday. A three-hour Talk It Out event at UC San Diego on Wednesday afforded students the opportunity to hash out their emotions with a doctor with counseling and psychological services. At the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, President Mark Schlissel touted its Office of Multi-Ethnic Student Affairs open space of support for those upset by the election. Students also hosted a vigil. And an email to George Mason University students from the student body president touted a healing space offered on campus in the wake of yesterday's presidential election. And I heard one local talk show host talk about one college, which he did not specifically identify, as offering a room with Play-Doh and crayons. So, David, it's good to see that everybody's respecting the system and accepting the results and moving on. That was the big worry about Trump, but it turns out the other side might not be ready for that.
You know, look, I take a backseat to no one in my love of free speech. I appreciate the right of these students and the right of these protesters to protest. I do not appreciate blocking streets. I do not appreciate the isolated violence that was out there. I mean, but look, let's just note the reality. In the run-up to this election, if an honest person would have to say that the side that was actually most likely to take to the streets and show some violence and do things like block traffic and do things like break the law in other ways in the event of an electoral loss was always going to be the radical left. I mean that's just been demonstrated by their behavior in the last 2 years or longer than that. So this is completely expected. I actually wrote a short piece right before the election that three things that will happen immediately after if Donald Trump wins. And one of them is there's going to be rage and fury on the left and possible violence. And guess what? There's rage and fury on the left and a little bit of violence. So the irony here is it was the left saying how dangerous it is not to accept the verdict of the people before this election when they assumed Hillary Clinton was going to win. It was the left who was saying that there are going to be Americans who won't accept this outcome, and those Americans are Trump voters. And now you actually have people walking out of classes, out in the streets, saying, "Not my president." but this was all predictable. Everybody knew this would happen who's been looking honestly at this. And I just hope it ends, that the violence ends today. The civil disobedience that is blocking access to streets, which is also very dangerous, ends today, and they revert to just peaceful protests, which they absolutely have a right to do.
David, you were never Trump. Why aren't you out there with pitchforks and torches?
Well, maybe I was, but you know, I live in rural Tennessee, and nobody else was there. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, what were Trump voters going to do if they rioted, burn down their own barn? I mean, it's, I'm in the middle of Trump country, the very heart of it, Maury County, Tennessee, and you could hold a riot out here and nobody would know. you would have trouble even getting 10 people living close enough together to, without driving some distance to make any difference. So, you know, look, deep built-up urban areas, you have a lot more people gathered together. You have a lot more radicals in those urban areas, so this isn't all that surprising.
And a lot more free time, it would appear.
exactly.
Well, David, perhaps some of these protesters are waiting for responses on job applications. Maybe not, but if they are, it could be because those employers just aren't all that organized and doing the best they can to find the perfect person for those jobs. So I ask, Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Because posting your job in one place isn't necessarily enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just one post, and watch your qualified candidates just roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, you can rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. So, David, we talked about the protests in the streets. Let's take a look now at the more intellectual protests with the election results from 2016. As it stands right now, I think Michigan's the only state that hasn't been called officially. Trump has a small lead there. He's got at least 290 electoral votes. Could go over 300 with that. But Hillary Clinton will likely win the popular vote by a few hundred thousand votes. And as almost expected by your watch, just as they did after the 2000 election when Bush beat Gore in the Electoral College, but not in the popular vote, the Democrats have now decided that this time it's really, really time to kill the Electoral College. Huffington Post headline, Electoral College about to screw Democrats for second time in 20 years. Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States, but it's nearly certain that Hillary Clinton got more votes. That will mean for the second time in 16 years, Democrats will have lost the White House despite winning the popular vote. They point out the Republicans have only won the popular vote once since 1988. And then the New Republic really takes the cake on this one. They say that as the reality of President Donald J. Trump sets in, dismayed progressives will try to apportion blame between a Trump-enabling, substance-ignoring media, Republican vote suppressors in state legislatures and the federal courts, Hillary Clinton's weaknesses as a candidate, irresponsible third-party runs, and various other factions. But we shouldn't lose sight of one simple fact. By the standards used to conduct elections in virtually every liberal, democratic jurisdiction in the world, Hillary Clinton won. As I type, Clinton has a popular vote lead of about 150,000 votes, and when the ballots from the West Coast states are counted, her lead is likely to expand substantially to a million or more. The American people, in other words, chose Hillary Clinton. She lost because the Constitution does not choose the president democratically. And then they go into two reasons why the founders decided to go with the Electoral College. First, they say, was the product of two imperatives, neither of them very attractive. First, it reflected the belief that many framers, that the excess democracy shown by state legislatures that had passed debt relief legislation needed to be curtailed. The second major purpose accomplished by the Electoral College was to protect the interests of slaveholders. Slaves, of course, did not vote, but the Electoral College meant that slaves would give the South extra clout in the Electoral College. And because Congress failed to adhere to its obligation under Section 2 of the 14th Amendment to reduce the representation of states that disenfranchised voters during the Jim Crow era, the Electoral College allowed the South to be fully represented in the selection of the president, even as it denied the right to vote to a large segment of its population. David, did you know the Electoral College is racist?
I did, because everything's racist. But look, I mean, let's give some credit to this. It is indeed troubling if you're a member of the Republican Party that the Republicans have lost now 6 out of the last 7 popular vote counts. That's not healthy. That's not good. But let's not overdo that, because not a single presidential race is run with the strategy of running up the popular vote. Not one of them. I mean, think about how different it would be if all that mattered was the popular vote. You would have Hillary going and basically camping out in places like California and New York, where there's a ton of blue votes, where they're just trying to run up the score enormously. You would have Republicans running down and camping out in Texas and Tennessee and other states like that. And it would be in many ways, I think, more polarizing, more sectional and more fractious than it is today. Because you would just be going to your deep red areas and trying to turn out as many people as humanly possible. And think about how that would change the political calculus. The appeal to the swing voter, would that exist? many states would just as they do now, virtually not exist for the purposes of presidential politics, in spite of the fact that they have distinctly different political cultures, distinctly different social cultures. So there is, you know, just to sit here and say, well, Hillary really won, really, the election wasn't fought on that basis. No one strategized around the popular vote. They strategized around the Electoral College. But at the same time, Republicans just can't laugh this off. I mean, 6 out of 7 popular vote losses is pretty darn troubling, and the one that they won in 2004 was by about 2 points. So that betrays a certain level of structural weakness that is of concern.
Obviously, with Republicans in control of Congress, I'm guessing any push towards addressing how our president is elected is not going anywhere for a while. And given the polarization of the country right now, I'm guessing no time in the foreseeable future.
Oh, no. There's no way on earth. I mean, for a political party to be so dominant as to be able to push through a constitutional amendment about the Electoral College would mean that they don't even need the constitutional amendment about the Electoral College. They're winning anyway. So it is here to stay. It is not going anywhere. You're going to have crying about it every time this happens. Historically, it's not all that common. So, you know, we're still in a historical aberration, and the vote total is going to end up really close. I mean, Hillary may end up, I think that's optimistic to say, with a 1 million vote lead. I think it'll be more like 500,000, 600,000, which when there's 120 million votes cast is not very much. And especially considering that a huge proportion of that lead is concentrated in one state, California. So, yeah, it's a concern, but let's spare me the crocodile tears.
Everybody knew the rules going in.
Exactly.
That's exactly what they need to take away from this, and do better next time if you don't like it. David, great to have you with us today, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
David French of National Review in for Jim Garrity today, and he'll be back again on Friday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks also to ZipRecruiter for sponsoring the podcast today. And remember that listeners can post job openings on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Have a great day, everyone. Join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.